Gaumont British Pictures presents Margaret Lockwood, Michael Redgrave, Paul Lucas, and Dame Mae Whitty in The Lady Vanishes, with Cecil Parker, Lyndon Travers, and Mary Clare. Based on the story, The Wheel Spins by Ethel Vera White. Directed by Alfred Hitchcock. Screenplay, Sidney Gilliatt and Frank Launder. Continuity, Alma Reville. Photography, Jack Cox. Editing, R.E. Deering. Cutting, Alfred Room. Recording, S. Wiles. Settings, Vachinsky. Musical director, Lewis Levy. A Gainsborough Picture. Cast, Margaret Lockwood as Iris Henderson. Michael Redgrave as Gilbert. Paul Lucas as Dr. Hartz. Dame Mae Whitty as Miss Freud. Cecil Parker as Eric Todhunter. Lyndon Travers as Margaret. Norton Wayne as Caldecott. Basil Radford as Charters. Mary Clare as the Baroness. Emil Borio as the hotel manager. Googie Withers as Blanche. Sally Stewart as Julie. Philip Lever as Signor Dapo. Zelma Bastias as Signora Dapo. Catherine Lacey as the nun. Josephine Wilson as Madame Coomer. Charles Oliver as the officer. Kathleen Tremaine as Anna. Snow blankets the mountains of Central Europe. An avalanche has blocked a train in the station of a small resort town. In the lobby of the town's only hotel, a dozen dispirited passengers are waiting. Coming down the stairs, a stout, middle-aged lady in tweeds and a felt hat approaches the desk where the hotel manager is on the telephone. Watched by the waiting passengers, she gets a stamp for a letter and heads for the front door, which blows open. Two passengers close it behind her. A moment later, it flies open again. Two men in shirt sleeves bustle in bearing suitcases and skis. A mechanical bugler in a clock adds to the confusion. The manager struggles to hear.
Prosto, prosto.
He hangs up the phone.
Signorine e signori, me sono molti caso. Il treno viene de mele. Particieri, come la registrazione del Maruma.
Passengers begin lining up at the desk. Two Englishmen are puzzled.
What's all this fuss about, Charters?
Hanged if I know.
Meine Damen und Herren, bitte schön, registroren, weil wir ne haben, bitte. Danke schön, danke schön. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very sorry. The train is a little bit hobbled. And if you wish to stay in my hotel, you have to register immediately.
What the deuce did he say to them in the first place?
Recognizing someone, the manager slips from behind the desk and hurries to greet three attractive young women.
I do, ladies. It's a great honor to have you with us again.
Nice to see you too, Boris. You haven't changed a bit since last Friday.
I see you haven't shaved either.
Is everything ready?
Everything is ready. I didn't change anything.
Not even the sheets. We know. Lead on, Boris.
You see, I didn't expect you to come so quickly.
Well, our legs gave out on us.
That's all.
Had to do the last lap in a farm car.
Oh.
I see we've got company. Don't tell me cooks are running cheap tours here. What is it, Boris?
It's the avalanche.
Avalanche? Avalanche, Boris. Avalanche.
You see, in the spring, we've got many avalanches. You know, the snow goes like that. Bloop! And everything disappears. Even train disappears under the avalanche.
But I'm going home tomorrow. How long before they dig it out?
By morning. It's lucky for you. You can leave by this train instead of your own. How you said it? It's a bad wind that blow nowhere no good.
Well, talking of wind, we haven't eaten since dawn. Serve us some supper, Boris, in our room.
I could eat a horse.
Don't put ideas into his head. Some chicken, Boris.
Yes.
And a magnum of champagne.
Absolutely.
And make it snappy.
To the annoyance of the passengers, Boris escorts the ladies up to their rooms.
Meanwhile, we have to stand here cooling our heels, I suppose, eh? Confounded impudence.
Oh, third-rate country, what do you expect?
I wonder who those women were.
Possibly Americans, I should think. You know, almighty dollar, old man.
I suppose we'd have to wait here. If only we hadn't missed that train at Budapest.
Well, Cole, I don't want to rub it in. But if you hadn't insisted on standing up until they'd finished their national anthem...
Yes, but you must show respect, Caldecott. What, if I'd known it's going to last 20 minutes?
Well, it's always been my contention that the Hungarian Rhapsody is not their national anthem. In any case, we were the only two standing.
That's true.
Well, I suppose we should be in time, after all.
I doubt it. That last report was pretty ghastly, do you remember? England on the brink.
Yes, but that's newspaper sensationalism. Your country's been in some tight corners before.
It looks pretty black. I mean, even if we get away first thing tomorrow morning, there's still a connection at Bow. We'll probably be ours.
That's true.
Well, somebody surely can help us. Oh, sir, do you happen to know what time the train leaves Bow for England?
Ich spreche kein Englisch.
Oh, really? The fellow doesn't speak English.
Returning to the lobby, Boris shrugs his way past the anxious passengers and barricades himself behind the desk. He waves at the crowd to shush. Then picks up an intercom.
Hello, Alex. Na kruska na tatrapotatiska. Ja, der rekatista champagne Miss Anderson. Grika, Grika, hoi,
vezmir. He hangs up and turns back to the crowd.
The
Englishmen study a train schedule.
Here's one leaves Val 21:20.
Boris shrugs at a well-dressed English couple.
I regret, sir, there is only left two single room in front or a little double room at the back.
We'll take the two singles.
Very well, sir. It is. Thank you.
The woman, chagrined, leads the man away from the desk.
Keith, you might have asked me which I prefer.
My dear, a small double room at the back in a place like this.
You weren't so particular in Paris last autumn.
It was quite different then. The exhibition was at its height.
I realize that now. There's no need to rub it in.
The two Englishmen are next.
We want a private suite at the bar.
Face in the mountain.
With a shower, of course.
Hot and cold.
And a private thing of me if you've got one.
Well, I'm sorry, gentlemen. The only things I've got is the maid room.
The what?
But I'm sorry, the whole hotel is packed, jammed to the sky.
Oh, but that's impossible. We haven't fixed up yet.
Hang it all. You can't expect to put the two of us up in the maid's room.
Well, don't get excited. I'll remove the maid out.
Yes, I should think so. What? What are you talking about?
Well, okay, I think I'll soon receive on the train.
Okay. Sir?
There is no eating on the train.
No eating on the train?
Yes, I mean... heating!
Oh, heating is no heating on the train.
Oh, that's awkward. All right, we'll take it.
Just a minute, with one condition. Mm-hmm. You have to have the maid come to your room and remove her wardrobe. Anna!
He summons the maid, a well-endowed blonde, with a pleasing smile.
She's a good girl, and I don't want to lose her.
He explains the situation to the maid. Anna grins at the Englishman, who smile back. But when she nods suggestively, their smiles fade.
You better go and dress.
Rather primitive humor, I think.
Grown-up children enough. That was rather an awkward situation over that girl.
I'm sure you couldn't have given us one each.
Eh?
I mean, a room apiece.
Oh.
Upstairs.
I, Iris Matilda Henderson, and do declare that on Thursday next, I shall take the veil and change my name to Lady Charles Fotheringale.
The three young women are changing their clothes when a waiter arrives with their champagne and food.
Can't you get him to change his name instead? The only thing I like about him is his moustache.
She stands on a table, hanging her damp clothes on a chandelier.
You're a couple of cynics. I'm very fond of him.
Well, I'm fond of rabbits, but they have to be kept down.
Rudolph, give me a hand.
Reaching up to her slim waist, the waiter helps her hop down. Then he pours the champagne.
Have you ever read about that little thing called love? It used to be very popular. Child, the carpet is already laid at St. George's, Hanover Square. And Father's simply aching to have a coat of arms on the jam label. To Iris and the happy day she's leaving behind. And the blue-blooded check chaser she's dashing to London to marry. The blue-blooded check chaser.
Iris sighs.
I've no regrets. I've been everywhere and done everything. I've eaten caviar at Cannes, sausage rolls at the Dogs. I've played baccarat beerits and darts at the Rural Dean. What is there left for me but marriage?
They toast. Outside their room, the waiter meets the maid.
Peccavato, soprano, andura, and treni, strano.
Crauben, lunging, count, cantato.
E nun so das englisto.
Englisto?
Greca.
Scandalized, the waiter shakes his head. In the maid's room.
This hanging about to get me. If only we knew what was happening in England.
Doesn't lose grip, Charters. Come in.
Come in, sir.
The Englishmen exchange a nervous glance. As Anna bends down beside the bed, they turn away. Caldecott drops his pajamas into a pail of water. Anna retrieves a straw bonnet and puts it on. Then she turns expectantly to the men.
What's going on we this foolish?
Did you follow that?
I did. Tell her this has gone far enough.
No change here. Outside.
Forest Gray.
Grinning happily, she starts undressing.
She doesn't understand.
No. Come on.
On his way out, Charters bumps his head on a beam. Outside, they put on their dinner jackets. Caldecott hands Charters a coat hanger, which he puts on the floor. As he straightens up, he bumps his head on another beam. As they come down the stairs to the lobby, a couple of passing guests eye their formal apparel. They check the newspapers.
Nothing newer than last month.
I don't suppose there is such a thing as a wireless set thereabouts.
Oh, well, being in the dark like this, you know, Caldecott, our communication's cut off in a time of crisis.
Hello, hello, hello. London? You want Mr. Seltzer? Yes. Hold on. I'm going right to find where he is.
Boris hurries off.
London.
The Englishman step over to the phone.
Go on, risk it.
Hello. Hello, you. You in London, huh? No, I'm not Mr. Seltzer. Name's Charters. I don't suppose you know me, huh? Well, you needn't worry. I've just gone to fetch him. Tell me, what's happening to England? Blowing a gale? No, you don't follow me, sir. I'm inquiring about the test match in Manchester. Cricket, sir, cricket! What, you don't know? You can't be in England and not know the test score.
Felicity doesn't know. Oh, silly ass.
Hello, can't you find out? Oh, nonsense, it won't take a second. Oh, all right. You won't. You won't.
He hangs up.
I find the fellow's an ignorant.
Mr. Seltzer, at last your call come through to London.
The Englishman watch
hello.
Mr. Seltzer
hello,
pick
hello.
Up the phone.
Can Mr. Tecras pick up at London? Huh?
Then they
Mr.
creep Kras away.
London. Oh, sacre la macarle forniatica.
Charters and Caldecott stroll through the crowded dining room. When they notice two people getting up, they hustle over to the booth with another couple on their heels. Pushing their way past the people leaving, they slide into the booth. The waiter arrives.
Renifatado espanito.
No, thank you, waiter.
Renifatado espanito.
Well, what'd you say to a grilled steak?
That's a very good idea. Well done for me, Phil.
On the red side for me.
Renifatado espanito.
These people have a passion for repeating themselves.
I beg your pardon.
It's the stout, middle-aged lady.
Going to the large number of visitors, there's no food left.
No food? What sort of place is this? Expect us to share a blasted dog box with a servant girl on an empty stomach? Is that hospitality? Is that organization?
Oh, thank you.
The waiter leaves.
I'm hungry enough.
What a country. I don't wonder they have revolutions.
You're very welcome to what's left of the cheese. Of course, it's not like beef steak, but it's awfully rich in vitamins.
Oh, really? Thank you very much.
I'm afraid they're not accustomed to catering for so many people. Bandrica is one of Europe's few undiscovered corners.
Yes, that's probably because there's nothing worth discovering, I think.
You may not know it as well as I do. I'm feeling quite miserable at the thought of leaving it.
After you with the cheese, please.
Yes, anyhow, man, why not? You're going home.
Tomorrow. My little charges are quite grown up. I'm a governess and music teacher, you know. In the 6 years I've lived here, I've grown to love the country, especially in the mountains. I sometimes think they're like very friendly neighbors. You know, the big father and mother mountain with their white snow hats. And their nephews and nieces, not quite so big, with smaller hats. Right down to the tiniest hillock without any hat at all. Well, of course, that's just my fancy.
Oh, really?
I like to watch them from my bedroom every night when there's a moon. I'm so glad there's a moon tonight. Do you hear that music? Everyone sings here. The people are just like happy children, with laughter on their lips and music in their hearts.
It's not reflected in their politics, you know.
I never think you should judge any country by its politics. After all, we English are quite honest by nature, aren't we? You'll excuse me if I run away. Good night. Good night.
With a friendly smile, she gathers up her coat and sets off.
Queer sort of bird.
Type of whimsical, I thought.
After 6 years in this hole, we'd be whimsical.
Oh, I don't think so, man. She's very decent about that cheese.
I see she's finished the pickles.
Upstairs.
Good night, Alan.
out and serenading. Oh, let him. Nothing will keep me awake tonight. Good night, my children.
Iris kisses each of her friends on the forehead. As they go off, she notices the governess coming up the stairs. The governess nods a greeting to Iris and goes on to her own room next door. Inside her room, the governess hears the music. Crossing to the balcony doors, she opens them. Then, smiling to herself, she leans back to listen. Below her, the white-haired singer strums his guitar. As she taps out the beat on her palm, she looks toward the ceiling in annoyance. When the thumping continues, she heads for the door. Iris steps from her room.
What's happening, an earthquake?
That would hardly account for the music, could it? What a horrible noise. What can they be doing?
I don't know, but I'll soon find out.
In her room, Iris picks up the phone.
Hello?
She glances up at the swaying chandelier.
Musical country, this. Yes, I feel quite sorry for that poor singer outside. Has to compete with this.
Boris, Miss Henderson speaking. Look, someone upstairs is playing musical chairs with an elephant. Move one of them out, will you? I want to get some sleep. Okay. That'll settle it.
Thank you, sir. Some people have so little consideration for others, which makes life so much more difficult than it needs to be, don't you think? Thank you so much. I expect you'll be going to the train in the morning.
Yes.
I hope we shall meet again under quite the circumstances. Good night.
Good night.
Boris comes up the stairs.
Shana Madonna Cartel per cicatetta. Miss, please, I'll fix everything.
You'd better.
Boris enters the room. The waiter dances with a stout village couple, while a man plays the clarinet.
Hold it. Betty, don't move.
He sketches the dancer's pose. Nervously, Boris approaches him.
If you please, sir.
Get out. One, two.
Please, sir, will you kindly stop? The whole complaining in the hotel, you make too much noise.
The young Englishman sits up on the bed.
Too much what?
Too much noise. You dare to call it a noise. The ancient music with which your peasant ancestors celebrated every wedding for countless generations. The dance they danced when your father married your mother. Always supposing you were born in wedlock, which I doubt. Look at them. I take it you're the manager of this
hotel. Sure, I am the manager of this hotel.
Fortunately, I'm accustomed to squalor. Tell me, who's complaining?
This young English lady underneath.
Well, you tell the young English lady underneath that I am putting on record, for the benefit of mankind, one of the lost folk dances of Central Europe, and furthermore, she does not
but
own the hotel.
Don't you understand?
The tall Englishman hustles Boris out the door.
One, two.
Down in Iris's room.
You know what he said? Well, she thinks she is the Queen of Sheba. She thinks she owns this hotel.
Well, can't you get rid of him?
Impossible.
Iris reaches for her purse.
Are you sure?
I begin to wonder. It's come back to me. I've got an idea. You see the German lady, she will call him up in the telephone. She said, young man, it's my room. I did pay for it. Get out quickly. How's that, huh?
Good enough.
She hands him some banknotes. Boris pockets them and strides to the door.
We'll inject him with a little skitch. He'll never forget as long as he lives.
He turns out her light and closes the door.
Nothing but baseball.
Charters and Caldecott are in the maid's bed, completely hidden behind a newspaper.
Well, a word about cricket. Americans got no sense of proportion. Come in.
It's Anna. The two men are sharing Charter's pajamas. Noticing Caldecott's bare torso, Charters leans in front of him as Anna approaches the bed. She puts away her straw bonnet. Then, grinning over her shoulder at them, she collects her nightgown and goes out. She sticks her head back in.
Can't stand this ridiculous lack of privacy. Lock the door.
As he hurries to lock the door, it opens, and he hits his head on a beam. Anna retrieves her hairbrush and goes out. Iris is asleep in bed. Her door opens, and a man turns on the light, awakening her. It's the tall young Englishman.
Who are you? What do you want?
Recognize the signature, too?
Will you please get out?
Oh, this is a much better room. Definitely an acceptable room.
He has all his belongings with him. Pulling out his walking stick, he kisses it and places it on the bed. As Iris watches in disbelief, he casually tosses her jacket off a bedpost and replaces it with his overcoat. Then he removes her slip from the other bedpost and hangs up his duffel bag.
What exactly do you think you're doing? Keep away!
Placing his suitcase on the nightstand, he sits on the bed.
Would you hold those for a minute?
She hurls his instrument case aside. He opens his suitcase to get his pajamas.
Put those back at once.
Then he takes one of her pillows.
Now, which side do you like to sleep?
Do you want me to throw you out?
Oh, in that case, I'll sleep in the middle.
Crawling over her, he hops off the bed and walks to the bathroom.
Smart of you to bribe the manager.
Iris gets out of bed, pulls on her nightgown, and steps to the bathroom door.
An eye for an eye, and a tooth for a toothbrush.
I suppose you realize you're behaving like a complete cad.
On the contrary, you're perfectly at liberty to sleep in the corridor if you want to.
Iris hurries to the phone.
Hello?
Oh, I shouldn't if I were you. I'd only tell everyone you invited me here.
She hangs up angrily.
And when I say everyone, I mean everyone. And I have a powerful voice.
He shuts the door in her face.
Come out of there at once.
Not until you bribe the manager to restore me to my attic.
Come out of that bathroom.
Iris paces, arms crossed on her chest. Finally, she tiptoes over to the phone.
Hello, Boris? Look, I was thinking I might change my mind about that room upstairs.
The young Englishman emerges from the bathroom.
Oh, by the way, you might have my things taken upstairs. Would you?
He saunters to the door.
You're the most contemptible person I've ever met in all my life.
Confidentially, I think you're a bit of a stinker, too.
The village is dark. The governess stands at the window of her room, listening to the serenade. The white-haired singer plays below her window. From behind, someone's hands reach toward the singer, grab him around the throat, and throttle him. Assuming his song is merely finished, the governess drops a coin down from her balcony and withdraws into her room. The coin lies unclaimed on a cobblestone. As she prepares for bed, the governess tries to remember the tune. The next morning, the train station is busy with passengers preparing to board the train. Caldecott and Charters arrive.
We'll forget the bar on time. We should see the last day on that.
Hope the weather's like this in Manchester. Perfect wicket for our fellows.
The well-dressed English couple approach the train.
Isn't it somewhere along here?
If you don't hurry, Margaret, we shan't get that compartment to ourselves.
Does it matter?
Iris arrives with her two friends.
Well, there's still time to change your mind, Iris.
Yes, why not send Charles a greeting telegram? Tell him he's all washed up.
No, it's too late. This time next week, I shall be a slightly sunburnt offering on an altar in Hanover Square. I shan't mind, really.
The governess spots them.
Oh, good morning. I can't find my bag. It's a brown hold-all, you know. Have you seen? No, of course not. Thank you.
Iris shrugs at her friends. Then she bends down.
She dropped her glasses.
She follows the governess, who is looking for her bag. Above her, a hand pushes a flower box.
Hey, you dropped your glasses.
Oh, thanks so much. Oh,
a heavy box hits Iris on the head.
Oh, darling, are you hurt?
Oh, I don't know. What was it?
A conductor passes.
Never mind about that. This cockeyed station of yours is practically brain my friend.
Yes, indeed.
Well, what are you going to do about it?
He says he cannot stop.
Hold the train. My life. Up, it's going.
Yes, my dear.
I'll be all right, really. Are you sure?
Be careful now.
The governess helps her aboard.
Don't worry. I look after her. Such care.
Porters clear the last of the snow from the track. Iris waves to her friends.
Are you sure you're all right? Let us come in time. Write and tell us all about you. Good luck. Look after yourself.
As the train pulls out of the station, Iris nods and waves. But then, her vision blurs, and she sinks back in a faint. Sometime later, she awakens to find herself sitting in a compartment of the train.
There, there. You'll be all right in a minute. Just take everything quietly. Put some of this old cologne on your head.
The governess sits across from her. They share the compartment with a man in a beret, a dowager with a stern gaze, and the man's wife and young son. Taking the governess's cologne-soaked handkerchief, Iris presses it to her forehead.
Do you feel any better?
Yes, thank you. I'm all right now.
What you need is a good, strong cup of tea. I'll ring for the attendant.
No, no, please don't bother. I'll go to the dining car myself. I need some air.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll come with you. If you don't mind, that is.
No, of course not.
As they make their way along the lurching corridor, the governess almost stumbles into a compartment.
Oh! I beg your pardon. I
the well-dressed Englishman pulls the shade.
You can always tell a honeymoon couple, you know. They're so shy.
Inside the compartment.
Why did you do that?
We don't want people staring at us.
Anyone who thinks the whole legal profession were dogging you.
Well, one would be enough.
You even thought that beggar in Damascus was a bear in disguise.
I merely said his face was distinguished enough for a judge.
You hurried off in the opposite direction, I noticed.
That's not true. I was looking for a street called Straight.
You weren't so careful the first few days.
I know, I know.
And anyway, for you meeting someone, you know, what about me? Robert thinks I'm cruising with Mother.
Iris and the governess, followed by a steward, enter the dining car. They take a table next to Caldecott and Charters.
If one's feeling a little bit shaky, I always think it's best to sit in the middle of the coach. Preferably facing the engine. A pot of tea for two, please.
Very good.
Oh, and just a minute.
She searches in her handbag.
Will you please tell them to make it from this? I don't drink any other. And make absolutely sure that the water is really boiling. You understand?
The steward leaves.
It's a little sad of mine. My dear father and mother, who I'm thankful to say are still alive and enjoying good health, invariably drink it. And so I follow their footsteps. Do you know a million Mexicans drink it? At least that's what it says on the packet.
It's very kind of you to help me like this. I don't think we've introduced ourselves. My name's Iris Henderson. I'm going home to be married.
Really? Oh, how very exciting. I do hope you'll be happy.
Thank you.
You'll have children, won't you? They make such a difference. I always think it's being with kiddies so much that's made me, if I may say so, young for my age. I'm a governess, you know. My name is Troy. Is that Troy? Troy. Troy.
Unable to make herself heard over the clatter of the train, the governess uses her finger to print F-R-O-Y on the window beside their table.
Oh, it rhymes with joy.
The steward brings their tea.
Please reserve two places for lunch, will you? That is, if you care to have it with me.
Of course.
There's nothing moot about it. Simply wasn't out, that's all. But for the umpire's blunder, he'd probably still be betting.
What do you mean? I don't understand.
I'll show you. Look here. I saw the whole thing.
He spills out some sugar cubes.
Now then, there's Hammond. There's the bowler. There's the umpire.
Sugar? Dear me, there is no sugar.
Now watch this very, very carefully, Colligan. Grimmett was bowling.
May I trouble you for the sugar, please?
What?
The sugar, please.
Charters and Caldecott exchange a glance and then, sighing with exasperation, begin gathering up the sugar cubes. Charters plunks the bowl down in front of Miss Froy.
Thank you so much.
As the train steams across a viaduct in the mountains, Iris and Miss Froy return to their compartment.
If I were you, I'd try and get a little sleep. It'll make you feel quite well again. There's a most intriguing acrostic in The Needlewoman. I'm going to try and unravel it before you wake up.
Iris watches the man in the beret do a little magic trick for his son. As Miss Froy smiles across at her, Iris's eyes grow heavy, and she falls asleep. The train rushes on, devouring the miles in its long journey down through the mountains. As it steams around a curve, the whistle awakens Iris. She peers at the dowager and the man in the beret sitting across from her. Miss Froy's seat is empty. The chief steward appears.
A reservation for lunch, please.
Been there.
Yeah?
Been there.
Madame has booked for lunch.
Oh, I think my friend did. She's got the ticket.
Iris leans into the corridor and looks up and down for Miss Froy. Then she turns to the other passengers.
Have you seen my friend?
No.
My friend, where is she?
The man in the beret shrugs.
La Signora Inglese, the English lady, where is she?
There has been no English lady here.
What?
There has been no English lady here.
There has. She sat there in the corner. You saw her. You spoke to her. She sat next to you.
The dowager shakes her head.
But it's ridiculous. She took me to the dining car and came back here with me.
You went and came back alone.
Maybe you don't understand. I mean the lady who looked after me when I was knocked out.
Ah, perhaps it make her you forget, eh?
Well, I may be very dense, but if this is some sort of a joke, I'm afraid I don't see the point.
Iris steps out into the corridor and makes her way along it, looking in each compartment for Miss Froy. As she approaches the lavatory at the end of the car, a man comes out of it and steps past her. She goes on through the connecting doors into the dining car. The chief steward is checking his reservations. Iris heads toward him, then changes her mind and turns back. She finds the person she's looking for outside the galley.
Oh, steward, you served me tea just now.
Yes, madame.
Well, have you seen the lady? I was with the English lady.
But madame was alone.
The chief steward joins.
Pardon, madame, he make mistake.
Well, of course, he must remember the little English lady. She ordered the tea and paid for it.
No, it is you pay.
Katroki.
Nagraditen.
You say to look at the bill. I will look, madame.
But she gave you a special packet of tea. You can't have forgotten that.
The tea was ours, madame. I received no packet.
But you did. I know what happened.
Pardon, madame, the bill. Tea for one.
But that's not right.
Perhaps madame would care to examine the bills herself.
No, I wouldn't. The whole thing's too absurd.
Iris stalks off. As the train rushes on, she makes her way back to the crowded third-class car. The first person she turns to is the young Englishman.
Oh, well, if it isn't old stinker. I thought you were going to be on this train. I've stayed another week in the hotel. Lady, no, why?
It doesn't matter. You probably wouldn't recognize one anyway.
As she turns to go, she has a dizzy spell.
Well,
he steps after.
That pipe of yours, George, why don't you throw your old socks away? Never mind. Thanks for the help, all the same.
Oh, come on, sit down, take it easy. What's the trouble?
You must know, something fell on my head.
When? Infancy?
At the station.
Oh, bad luck. Can I help?
Oh, only by going away.
No. My father always taught me never desert a lady in trouble. He even carried that as far as marrying Mother.
Say, did you see a little lady last night in the hotel in tweeds?
I only saw one little lady. She was hardly in tweeds.
Yes, but she was in my compartment, and now I can't find her.
Well, she must be still on the train. We haven't stopped since we started.
Of course, she's still on the train. I know that.
All right. Nobody said she isn't.
Yes, but that's just what they are saying.
Who?
The rest of the people in the compartment and the steward. They insist they never saw her.
All of them?
All of them.
You were saying you've got a knock on the head?
What do you mean?
Oh, never mind. Did you talk to Linga?
No.
Oh, well, they probably thought you were trying to borrow some money. Come on, let's knock the idea out of their stupid heads. It's an unfortunate remark, I beg your pardon.
Outside Iris's compartment, they find the man in the beret speaking to a distinguished gentleman.
I say, excuse me, I think there's been a little misunderstanding. This young lady seems to have lost her friend.
Yes, I have heard. This gentleman has been explaining to me. Most interesting. And I think under the circumstances, we shall all introduce ourselves.
I am an Italian citizen. My wife and child.
How do you do? Oh, bonnet little chap. How old is he?
A 1934 class. Uh-huh. And the lady in the corner is the Baroness Arpona.
Oh, yes. I met her husband. He presented prizes at the folk dance festival. Minister of Propaganda.
And I am Dr. Egon Hartz of Prague. You may have heard of me.
Not the brain specialist.
Yes,
you flew over to England the other day and operated on one of our cabinet ministers.
Oh, yes.
Tell me, did you find anything?
A slight cerebral contusion.
Oh, well, that's better than nothing.
But I am picking up a similar case at the next station, but so much more complicated. I shall operate at the National Hospital tonight. Among other things, a cranial fracture with compression. Do you understand?
Oh, yes. Wallop on the beam.
I suppose you haven't seen my friend.
Unfortunately, no.
I'll just take a word with the Baroness.
Iris follows him into the compartment.
Apakara visne femona, Baroness?
Nigre femona.
Scusi, avete visto la signora?
No. Non la vista.
What do they say?
Well, they both say they've never seen her.
But that's not true. She was sitting where you are.
Can you describe her?
Well, it's a bit difficult. You see, she was sort of middle-aged and ordinary.
Well, what was she wearing?
Tweeds, oatmeal flecked with brown, a three-quarter coat with patch pockets, a scarf, felt hat, brown shoes, a tassel shirt, and a small blue handkerchief in her breast pocket. I can't remember any more.
You couldn't have been paying attention. Now, listen. You both went along to tea.
Yes.
Well, surely you met somebody.
I suppose we did, but... Wait a moment, let me think. Oh, yes, there was an Englishman who passed the sugar.
Right, Schwan. Now, let's go along and dig him out.
Pardon me, I come with you. This is most interesting to me.
Well, we don't like people muscling in, but we'll make you a member.
Dr. Hartz follows them along the corridor. As they approach the compartment with the drawn shades...
Wait a moment, there was somebody else. As we passed this compartment, Miss Freud tumbled in. There was a tall gentleman and a lady.
All right, now we're getting somewhere. If we can really find someone who saw, we'll have the place searched.
Can I be of any assistance?
That's the gentleman.
Well, do you happen to remember seeing this young lady pass the compartment with a little English woman?
I'm afraid not.
But you must have. She almost fell into your compartment. Surely you haven't forgotten. It's very important. Everybody's saying she wasn't on the train, but I know she is. And I'm going to find her, even if I have to stop the train to do it.
Charters has overheard her.
Caldecott, this is Charters. Can I come in?
Caldecott opens the lavatory door.
You know where that girl we saw at the hotel? And she's back there kicking up a devil with her. Says she's lost her friend.
Well, she hasn't been in here, old man.
But the point is, she threatens to stop the train.
Oh, Lord.
If we miss our connection with the bar, we'll never make Manchester in time.
Yeah, this is serious.
Let's hide him here.
They step into the lavatory.
Sorry, I haven't the faintest recollection. You must be making a mistake.
Well, he obviously doesn't remember. Let's go and look for the other fellow.
In the English couple's compartment...
Who are you talking to outside?
Hmm? Oh, nobody. Just people in the corridor arguing.
As the trio passes the lavatory, the two Englishmen slip out of it.
There he is. That's the man.
Oh, I say. I'm so sorry. I wonder if I can bother you. I wonder if you can help.
How?
Well, I was having tea about an hour ago with an English lady. You saw her, didn't you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, definitely. I was talking to my friend, wasn't I?
Indubitably.
Yes, but you were sitting at the next table. She turned and borrowed the sugar. You must remember.
Oh, yes, I recall passing the sugar.
Well, then you saw her.
I repeat, we were deep in conversation. We were discussing cricket.
Well, I don't see how a thing like cricket can make you forget seeing people.
Oh, don't you? Well, if that's your attitude, obviously there's nothing more to be said. Come, Caldecott. Thing like cricket. Wrong tactics. We should have told him we were looking for a lost cricket ball.
Yes, but he spoke to her. There must be some explanation.
There is. Please forgive me. I'm quite possibly wrong, but I have known cases where a sudden shock or blow has induced the most vivid impression.
I understand. You don't believe me.
Oh, it's not a question of belief. Even a simple concussion may have curious effects upon an imaginative person.
Yes, but I can remember every little detail. Her name, Miss Froy, everything.
So interesting. You know, if one had time, one could trace the cause of the hallucination.
Hallucination?
Oh, precisely. There is no Miss Froy. There never was a Miss Froy. Merely a vivid subjective image.
But I met her last night at the hotel.
You thought you did.
But what about the name?
Oh, some past association, some advertisement, or a character in a novel, subconsciously remembered. No, there is no reason to be frightened if you're quiet and relaxed.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Hartz lowers a window and peers up the track as the train approaches a station.
Doctor, if you will excuse me, this is where my patient comes aboard. Excuse me.
He peers at Iris.
Most interesting.
And hurries off.
Stopping?
It's the first stop, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, then Miss Fry must still be on the train. Look, you look out of this window and see if she gets off this side. I'll take the other.
He peers at her.
Most interesting.
Iris lowers a window on the other side and looks up.
What was she dressed in? Scotch tweed, wasn't it?
Oatmeal tweed.
Well, I know that's something to do with porridge.
Dr. Hartz steps down to the platform as two attendants wheel out a stretcher.
Springfield.
A nun accompanies the patient, whose head is covered with bandages. The stretcher is lifted aboard the train. The young Englishman watches while Iris looks up and down the empty platform on the other side of the train. Nearby, in the English couple's compartment...
How long does it take to get a divorce? Eric.
I beg your pardon, I wasn't listening.
I said, how long does it take to get a divorce?
Well, that depends. Why?
I was only wondering whether we could take our honeymoon next spring. I mean, the official one.
The difficulties are considerable. For one thing, the court's very crowded just now. Although I suppose we barristers ought not to complain about that. As a matter of fact, with conditions as they are now, my chances of becoming a judge are very rosy. Now, that is, if nothing untoward occurs.
Such as you being mixed up in a divorce case yourself.
Yes.
In that first careless rapture of yours, you said you didn't care what happened.
Yeah, you must think of it from my point of view. The law, like Caesar's wife, must be above suspicion.
Even when the law spends 6 weeks with Caesar's wife?
Look here.
Now I know why you've been running around like a scared rabbit.
He shuts the window.
Why, you lied to me a few minutes ago.
I lied?
Yes, to those people in the corridor. I heard every word you said.
He closes the door.
It was merely that I didn't wish to be mixed up in any inquiry.
Inquiry? Just because a little woman can't be found.
That girl was making a fuss. If the woman had disappeared, and I'd admitted having seen her, we might become vital witnesses. My name might even appear in the papers, coupled with yours. Why, a scandal like that might lead anywhere. Anywhere.
Yes. I suppose it might.
Glancing sidelong at him, she strolls to the door. As the train chugs out of the station, Iris rejoins the young Englishman, Gilbert.
Nobody?
Nobody.
The only thing that came out my side was two bits of orange peel in a paper bag.
I know there's a Miss Froy. She's as real as you are.
That's what you say and you believe it, but there doesn't appear to be anybody else who's seen her.
I saw her, I think. You did? A little woman in tweed.
Yes?
Wearing a three-quarter coat.
With a scarf?
That's right. I saw with you when you passed the compartment.
I knew I was right. But your husband said he hadn't seen her.
Oh, he didn't notice. But as soon as he mentioned it, I remembered at once.
You will? You know, this calls for action. Are you prepared to make a statement?
Of course, if it helps.
Ah, pardon. My patient has just arrived. The most fascinating complication.
We've some news for you. This lady actually saw Miss Froy.
So, we're going to have the train searched.
You'll have to think of a fresh theory now, Doctor.
It is not necessary. My theory was a perfectly good one. The facts were misleading. I hope you will find your friend. Excuse me.
I'll be in here if you want me.
Right, you are. Come along.
Back inside the compartment, the Englishwoman shuts the door and pulls down the shade.
Eric. I was only going to mention that I told that girl I'd seen her friend.
What's that? You taking leave of your senses?
On the contrary, I've come to them.
What do you mean?
If there's a scandal, there'd be a divorce. You couldn't let me down, could you? You'd have to do the decent thing as reluctantly as only you know how.
You forget one very important thing, Margaret. Your husband would divorce you, I've no doubt. Whatever happens, my wife will never divorce me.
Iris and Gilbert are with the conductor.
Well, it may seem crazy to you, but I tell you, I'm going to search the train.
Ah, signorina. Von der
it's the man Wood. In the beret.
Your friend. She come back.
Come back?
She.
But what happened?
Oh, you go see. She tell you. Scusi. Thanks. All right, Apple, sooner or less. The crisis is over.
Come dismissing on, the conductor, Gilbert and Iris hurry to her compartment.
Miss Froy.
Sitting in Miss Froy's seat, a similarly dressed woman looks up at them.
That isn't Miss Froy.
Isn't it?
No.
I say, it's a silly thing to say, but are you Miss Froy?
No. I am Madame Kummer.
Oh, she says she helped you into the carriage after you got the biff on the head and then went to see some friends.
The
Baroness says that as you spoke about the English lady, she didn't connect her with Madame Kummer.
But she wasn't the lady I saw. It was Miss Froy.
Tweeds, blouse, blue silk handkerchief.
Yes, I know. Everything's the same, but it isn't her.
I beg your pardon. When did you say you first met this Miss Froy?
Last night at the hotel.
Oh, and was she wearing a costume like this?
Yes, I think so.
Then I must apologize. You did meet her after all.
Then...
But not on this train. In your subconscious mind, you substituted for the face of Madame Kummer that of Miss Froy.
But I didn't. I couldn't have, I tell you. I talked to her here.
It's very easily settled. There's an Englishwoman on the train who said she saw her. If this lady wouldn't mind. Madame, d'abro na selam dan dan to the art.
No, no, it's la tasca.
Ah, bon, après vous, madame. What a gift for language, as well as good.
Dr. Hartz watches them accompany Madame Kummer down the corridor to the English couple's compartment. Eric opens the door.
I'm so sorry. Would you tell us, please, is this the woman you saw?
It isn't a bit like her, is it?
Margaret glances sidelong at Eric.
Yes, she's the woman. But it isn't, I tell you, it isn't.
Are you sure?
Perfectly. She isn't.
Right, right, up there?
I'll ask her then. Well, come on then. I'm so sorry to trouble you.
Eric shuts the door and pulls the shade.
Well, aren't you going to say anything? You might at least gloat, if nothing else.
What am I expected to say? You only did it to save your own skin.
In the corridor.
She was lying, I saw it in her face. They're all lying, but why? Why?
Now, why don't you sit down and take it easy?
Do you believe this nonsense about substituting Miss Roy's face for Madame Kummer's?
Well, I think any change would be an improvement.
Listen, Miss Roy was on this train. I know she was, and nothing will convince me otherwise. Must you follow me around like a pet dog?
Oh, well, let's say a watchdog. I've got all the better instincts.
Bye.
Iris sits in her compartment. As she looks at the faces of her fellow passengers one by one, she sees, in her mind's eye, the face of Miss Froy. Frightened, she rushes out to Gilbert.
The doctor was right. You're all right. I never saw Miss Froy on the train. It didn't happen. I know now.
I'm glad you're going to take it like that. What you want to do is to forget all about it. Just make your mind a complete blank. You know, watch me. You can't go wrong. What about a spot of something to eat? Eh?
Anything.
That's right. Come on.
In the busy dining car, Gilbert and Iris are seated at the same table Iris shared with Miss Froy.
Oh, do you like a little air?
He lowers the window, on which the letters F-R-O-Y are still visible.
Oh, do you think you can eat anything?
I could try.
It's a spirit. You'll feel a different girl tomorrow.
I hope so. I don't want to meet my fiancé a nervous wreck.
You're what?
I'm being married on Thursday.
Quite sure you're not imagining that.
Positive.
Oh, I was afraid so. Ah, food.
I couldn't face it.
Well, you know best. Do you mind if I talk in a mouthful?
If you must.
Well, now, would you like to hear about my early life?
I don't think so.
Well, since you press me, I'll begin with my father. You know, it's remarkable how many great men began with their father. Oh, something to drink?
No. Oh, yes, I will. A cup of tea, please.
You know, my father was a very colorful character. Amongst other things, he was strongly addicted to, you'll never guess.
Harriman's herbal tea.
How wrong, double scotch.
A million Mexicans drink it.
Oh, maybe they do, but father didn't.
Miss Froy gave the waiter a packet of it.
Packet of what?
Harriman's herbal tea. She said it was the only sort she liked.
Okay, I thought we'd agree that you were going to make your mind a complete blank.
But it's so real, I'm sure it happened.
Did we, or did we not?
We did. Sorry. Go on telling me about your father.
Well, my father was a very remarkable man.
Did he play the clarionet?
Incessantly, and in fact, he never put it down unless this became absolutely necessary. Well, naturally, I couldn't help inheriting his love of music.
Why not?
Well, that was all he left me.
They share a smile.
Well, very remarkably attractive. Has anyone ever told me?
We were discussing you.
Ah, it's good. You like me?
Not much.
He sighs.
Well, after I'd paid my father's debts, I started to travel until they'd tried to cash the checks. At the moment, you know, I'm writing a book on folk dancing. Would you like to buy a copy?
I'd love to. When does it see the light of day?
About 4 years.
That's a very long time.
Very long book.
Iris gazes out the window.
Do you know why you fascinate me? I'll tell you. You've got two great qualities I used to admire in father. You haven't any manners at all, and you're always seeing things.
She sees the name.
Well, what's the matter?
Look.
The train enters a tunnel, and the name fades out.
It's gone.
What's gone?
Miss Roy's name on the window. You saw it. You must have seen it. She's on the train.
No, steady.
He grabs a glass of water from another diner.
No, we've got to find her. Something's happening to her. Stop the train.
She strides to the middle of the car.
Listen, everybody, there's a woman on this train, Miss Roy. Some of you must have seen her. They're hiding her somewhere. I appeal to you, all of you, to stop the train.
Dr. Hartz approaches
please
her.
Please help me. Please make them stop the train.
Come on.
Do you hear? Why don't you do something before it's too late?
Please.
I know you think I'm crazy, but I'm not. I'm not. For heaven's sake, stop this train.
No,
leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Iris tears free, dashes to the end of the car, and pulls the emergency stop cord. Then she faints. Later, in Caldecott and Charter's compartment...
10 minutes late. Thanks to that fool of a girl. If she gets up to any more of her tricks, it should be too late for the last day of the match.
I suppose you couldn't put it to her in some way.
What?
Well, people just don't vanish and so forth.
She has.
What?
Vanished.
Who?
The old dame.
Yes.
Well?
Well, how could she?
What?
Well, vanish.
I don't know.
That just explains my point. People don't just disappear into thin air.
It was done in India.
What?
The rope trick.
Oh, that. It never comes out in a photograph.
Dr. Hartz comforts Iris.
Look now. In half an hour, we'll stop at Morskan, just before the border. I will leave there with my patient for the National Hospital. If you will come with me, you could stay overnight in a private ward. You need peace and rest.
Sorry, nothing doing.
Isn't there anything we can do?
Yes, find Miss Froy.
Dr. Hartz joins Gilbert in the corridor.
I tell you, my friend, if she does not rest, I will not answer for her. It will be best if you persuade her she likes you.
Oh, I'm just about as popular as a dose of strychnine.
If you caught it with sugar, she may swallow it.
The doctor leaves. Gilbert glances into the compartment at Iris. Then he moves a little way down the corridor. As he lights his pipe, a cook emerges from the galley with a bowl of kitchen trash, which he empties out the window. A scrap sticks to the window in front of Gilbert, catching his attention. An empty packet of Harriman's tea. As it blows away, he steps into the compartment and sits beside Iris, who gives him a weary glance. Gilbert considers the man in the beret and the Baroness sitting across from them.
Cosmopolitan train. People of all nations. I've just seen at least 1 million Mexicans in the corridor.
Her eyes open, and she darts a glance at him.
Well, I thought I'd look in to tell you to think over what Dr. Hart said. If you feel like changing your mind, I'll be hanging around.
Iris follows him out into the corridor.
It's all a mystery.
You're right. Miss Froy is on this train. I've just seen the packet of tea that you were talking about. They chucked it out with the rubbish.
Trifle late, aren't you? She may be dead by now. Dead
or... Madam Coomer passes.
Oh, sure, right. They give me an English summer. I remember once spending a bank holiday at Brighton... We're going to search this train. There's something definitely queer in here.
As the train rattles along, Iris and Gilbert make their way through the third-class carriage and enter the baggage car.
Looks like supply service for junk murderers.
They're considering the assortment of chests, boxes, and cartons when Iris notices one of them is moving. It's a large wicker hamper. Gilbert rushes to open it.
All right, let's go. It's on the
hurry up.
He lifts the lid Inside is a calf about 3 weeks old.
Well, perhaps it's Miss Freud who witched you. Never know. Well, anyway, I refuse to be discouraged. Faith heart, we'll find old lady.
They continue searching.
By the way, do you know anything about her?
No. Only that she was a governess going back home.
Gilbert taps a tall cabinet.
What is this thing?
I can't imagine. Anyway, there might be something down here.
They uncover a life-size cutout of a magician.
What on earth?
Our Italian friend.
It's the man in the beret.
I've got it. Wait a minute. There you are, the great doctor.
He finds and unrolls a theatrical poster.
His visiting card, look.
What's it say?
The great Dapo, magician, illusionist, mind reader, will visit all the principal towns and cities, see his fascinating act, The Vanishing Lady.
Vanishing Lady?
Perhaps that's the explanation.
What?
Maybe he's practicing on Miss Freud.
Well, perhaps the publicity stunt.
No, I don't think so. That wouldn't account for the Baroness, Madame Kummer.
Well, what's your theory?
Oh, I don't know. My theory? I'll tell you.
Inadvertently, he opens a basket releasing some pigeons. While Iris tries to catch them, Gilbert inspects the tall cabinet he tapped on earlier. Pulling aside the curtain that covers it, he disappears inside.
Where are you?
In here, with a strong smell of camphor.
I can't see you.
As Iris disappears into the cabinet, Gilbert emerges from it.
Here I am. Where are you? This is what comes of not saying abracadabra.
Oh!
You hurt?
Iris has fallen out the back.
Not much.
Come sit down over here.
What is that thing?
Well, in magic circles we call it a disappearing cabinet. Get inside and vanish.
So I noticed. You were about to tell me of your theory.
Oh, my theory. Well, my theory, my dear Watson, is that we are in very deep waters indeed.
She hands him a meerschaum pipe.
Thank you very much. Let us marshal our facts over a pipeful of baked fish egg. In the first place, a little old lady disappears. Everyone that saw her promptly insists that she was never there at all. Right?
Right.
We know that she was. Therefore, they did see her. Therefore, they are deliberately lying. Why?
I don't know. I'm only Watson.
Well, don't bury yourself in the butt. I'll tell you why. Because they daren't face an inquiry, because Miss Freud is probably still somewhere on this train.
I told you that hours ago.
Oh, yes, I did. For that, my dear Watson, you shall have a Trichinopoly cigar.
Oh, thank you.
Now, there's only one thing left to do, you know. Search the train in disguise.
As what?
Well,
He finds a top hat and tries it on.
Old English gentleman.
Let's see through you.
I'm not sure I...
He exchanges the top hat for some pince-nez glasses.
Will Hay, for instance. Now, boys, which of you was stolen Miss Freud? Own up.
Those glasses. What? Give them to me.
Why?
They're Miss Freud's.
You sure?
Yes, they're exactly the same. Gold rings. Where did you find them?
Well, down here on the floor, the glass is broken.
Well, probably in a struggle.
Take off the glass. You realize that this is our first piece of really tangible proof?
As they gather up the bits of glass, a hand descends and grabs Gilbert's wrist. It's the man in the beret.
Will you please give me those spectacles? They belong to me. My spectacles, please.
Yours, are you sure?
That give me question, Chiara.
He grabs for the glasses.
Naughty.
You know, that's a very large nose for a very small pair of spectacles.
He tweaks the man's nose.
And that's the game, is it? See about that.
They wrestle.
Roy's glasses, and you know it. You've been in here, and you know that, too.
They crash to the floor, causing the calf to peek from its hamper. Gilbert looks up at Iris.
Don't stand hopping about there like a referee. Cooperate. Kick him. See if he's got a false bottom. And then I'll get him up.
As Gilbert drags him to his feet, the man twists around and Iris kicks Gilbert.
That doesn't help.
They crash to the floor again with Gilbert on the bottom.
Quick, pull his ears back. Give him a twist. Yeah.
Iris yanks back on the man's ears and they both roll over on top of her. She tries to struggle free, but she's pinned under them. Until Gilbert hauls the man to his feet. The man pulls something from his pocket.
He
flicks it open as Gilbert grabs his wrist.
Quick, get a hold of it before he cuts a slice off me.
I can't reach it.
Sliding over a suitcase, she climbs up on it, grabs the man's knife hand, pulls it to her mouth, and bites it. He drops the knife.
Well done.
Gilbert gets a hand free and clouts the man.
We know how
he
that
staggers
works.
Through the
come
cabinet, and Iris clubs him on the head.
Well, is he out, Gilbert? We've got to hide him somewhere. What's in here?
Hurry up quick before he comes to.
When the man's eyes start to open, Iris clubs him again.
It's empty. Bring him along.
They drag the magician over to a large trunk. And, before he can resist, shove him into it. Then they sit on the lid.
Oh.
What's the matter?
Garlic, I'll be all right in a minute. Here, hold on to this.
Oh, yes.
Time up. Oh, well, we're getting somewhere at last. We definitely know that Miss Floyd was on this train, and we know that our friend in here had something to do with it. That ought to keep him quiet until we find her. Oh, hard work, but worth it. Oh, let's have the evidence.
Evidence?
Yes, glasses.
You've got them.
No, I haven't got them.
Oh.
He's got them. Oh, he's
they open the trunk.
He isn't there. Well,
and find it empty.
Snooker, it's a false bottom. Twister, he's a contortionist.
It's gone, all right.
Yes, to find the others and make more trouble. We're in a nasty jam, my dear. We can't fight the whole train. We need allies.
Yes, but who can we trust?
Well, that's the snag.
There's that Dr. Hart's person.
Yes, you're right. He might help. Come along. Let's tell him the symptoms.
All right. Oh, wait a minute.
As the train steams towards its destination, Iris and Gilbert, smoothing their disheveled hair and clothes, hasten toward Dr. Hart's compartment.
This is the one.
Opening the door, he peers in at the black-robed nun and the white bandaged patient.
He's not there.
Iris notices something before he softly closes the door.
I've just had a particularly idiotic idea.
Mm, I can't believe that.
Well, suppose that patient in there is Miss Froy.
Yes, but it didn't come on the train till after Miss Froy disappeared.
Yes, that's why it's an idiotic idea. Come on, let's find the doctor.
No, wait a minute.
What is it?
Did you notice anything wrong about that nun?
No.
I don't think she's a nun at all. They don't wear high heels.
Gilbert peers inside again. Under her floor-length habit, the nun is wearing shiny black heels. He steps back to Iris.
It's all right. Listen, did you see Madame Kummer get on the train?
No.
Well, supposing they decoyed Miss Froy into the luggage van and hid her there. The first stop, patient comes aboard, head injury, all wrapped up. Patient is Madame Kummer. Madame Kummer becomes Miss Froy. Miss Froy becomes...
Yes, but why should they go to all this trouble to kidnap a harmless little governess?
It isn't a governess at all. Perhaps it's some political thing, you know? Let's investigate.
They step into the compartment.
Parlez-vous français? Sprechen Sie Deutsch? Jacques d'Abendrican? Oh, well, you just have to put up with it in English. Can we take a look at your patient, please? Thank you. Keep an eye on the nun.
Iris restrains the nun when she tries to keep Gilbert from removing the patient's bandages.
What are you doing here? Why are you in here? This is the most serious accident case. You have no business to be here at all, neither of you.
Dr. Hart, we want you to undo those bandages and let us take a look at your patient's face.
Are you out of your senses? There is no face there. Nothing but lumps of raw flesh. Already the case has lost so much blood, nothing but a transfusion can save him. What do you want me to do? Murder my patient?
I'm quite sure that this is your patient.
We believe it's Miss Froy.
Miss Froy? You can't be serious. What did I put such ideas into your head?
Gilbert nods toward the nun, who stares blankly at the doctor.
I understand she's deaf and dumb.
But she may lip read.
Oh, that's possible. But in that case, perhaps you'll join me in the dining car. I'll be with you in a moment. I want to be certain my patient hasn't been disturbed.
Closing the door behind them, he turns to the nun.
Cadrescam barango, sarcalto drang.
How the devil do I know how they cottoned on? Somebody must have tipped him off.
The doctor gets his black bag.
You never said the old girl was English.
What difference does that make?
He takes out a vial.
In a few moments, I shall order three drinks in the dining car. Mine will be chartreuse. Now, one of the stewards is working for us. Now listen carefully.
As Iris and Gilbert enter the dining car, they're noticed by Charters.
There's that girl again. Seems to have recovered. Lucky it blew over.
Mm. Dr. Hartz joins Iris and Gilbert at their table.
And now perhaps you'll tell me what's all about.
Well, now listen, Dr. Have you ever actually seen your patient?
No, I merely received the message to pick the case up and operate at Morse.
How do you know that it's not Miss Ford?
We believe there's been a substitution, Doctor.
You really mean to say that you think that someone has...
The steward arrives.
Oh, I want a green chartreuse. Won't you join me?
Oh, that's a large breath.
And you?
I don't want anything.
Oh, oh, come on, do you
think? No, really, I don't...
You're very tired. It'll pick you up.
All right, then, just a small one.
Two brandies and a chartreuse.
Come here. Do you know anything about the nun who's looking after your patient?
Nun? No, only that she's from a convent close to where the accident occurred.
Don't you think it's rather peculiar that she's wearing high-heeled shoes?
Oh, is she? Well, that is rather curious, isn't it?
It's a conspiracy, that's all it can be. All these people on the train say they haven't seen Miss Foy, but they have. We know that because just now in the luggage van...
She's off again. Hope she doesn't create another scene. Put the lid on her getting back in time if she did.
And then this fellow from the carriage, Doppers his name, he came along and grabbed the glasses.
Yeah, we went for him and had a bit of a fight.
Oh, a fight?
Mm-hmm.
We knocked him out.
Oh.
Passing their table, the man in the beret grins at them.
He seems to have made a speedy recovery.
So that's just bluff.
Here.
Dr. Hartz tips the steward, who took Miss Froy's tea. Then he glances back at the man in the beret.
Oh, but how could he be involved in a conspiracy? Look at him, the poor fellow. He's just a harmless traveler.
He's also a music hall artist making a tour of Banjica.
Well?
And the Baroness's husband is Minister of Propaganda. One word from her and his tour will be cancelled.
Oh, I see.
As for the stewards, if they don't know what they're told, they've got a nice cozy brick wall to come up against.
But tell me about the two English travelers. They also denied seeing her.
It's just British diplomacy, Doctor. Never climb a fence if you can sit on it. It's an old Foreign Office proverb.
What I cannot understand is, why should anyone want to dispose of the old lady?
Well, that's just what stumps us, but all we know is that she was here on this train, and now she's...
He tosses back half his brandy.
Gone.
Dr. Hart suppresses a smile.
Well, if you're right, it means the whole train is against us.
Yeah. What are we going to do?
Well... In view of what you just told me, I shall risk examining the patient. One moment. You mustn't act suspicious. Behave as if nothing had happened. Drink. That'll steady your nerves.
Gilbert passes Iris her drink. She picks it up.
To our health. And may our enemies, if they exist, be unconscious of our purpose.
He drains his glass as Gilbert finishes his brandy.
Let's go. We must hurry now.
They get up.
Come on, drink up.
As Iris swallows her brandy, Dr. Hartz suppresses another smile. They leave the dining car.
Wait in here.
Dr. Hartz shows them into the compartment next to his own. Then he returns to the nun and closes the door.
Anything wrong?
Nothing. Except they noticed you were wearing high heels. However, it makes no difference. We shall reach Morskin in 3 minutes. Quite an eventful journey.
He steps next door.
Well?
Yes, the patient is Miss Proy. She will be taken off the train at Morskin in about 3 minutes. She will be removed to the hospital there and operated on. Unfortunately, the operation will not be successful. Oh, I should perhaps have explained. The operation will be performed by me.
Gilbert jumps up, but the gun in Hartz's pocket persuades him to sit down again with Iris.
You see, I am in this conspiracy, as you term it.
He sits down across from them.
You are a very alert young couple. But it's quite useless for you to think, as you are undoubtedly doing, of a way out of your dilemma. The drinks you had just now, I regret to say, contain a quantity of hydrazine. For your benefit, hydrazine is a very little-known drug which has the effect in a small quantity of paralyzing the brain and rendering the victim unconscious for a considerable period. In a slightly larger quantity, of course, it induces madness. However, you have my word, the dose was a normal.
Iris's eyes close and she slumps over.
In a very few moments now, you will join your young friend. Need I say how sorry I am having to take such a, how shall I say, melodramatic course? But your persistent meddling made it necessary.
Gilbert slumps back. The doctor checks on them both and then leaves, closing the door behind him. Gilbert opens his eyes and rouses Iris.
You all right? You must have fainted.
Did I?
Listen, there's a woman next door going to be murdered, and we've got to get moving before this stuff takes effect.
Oh, I did read once that if you keep on the go, you can stay awake.
Right. Come on, let's get going.
He tries the door to the next compartment.
It's locked.
The other door opens on the corridor.
We can't go that way. We'd be spotted.
He steps over to the window.
You can't do that!
Don't worry. It's in the next door. You carry on keeping fit. Touch your toes. Stand on your head. Do anything. Only whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Hooking an arm around the frame, Gilbert climbs out the window. As he hangs there, another train, rushing in the opposite direction, almost peels him off. With Iris watching, he grapples along the outside of the train to the next compartment. The nun makes no effort to stop him as he climbs in the window. He pulls out a handkerchief to gag her, then changes his mind. After turning to the patient, he glances back at the nun.
Go on. You needn't be afraid. It is Miss Troy. It's all right. You haven't been drugged. He told me to put something in your drink, but I didn't do it.
Who the devil are you? He said you were deaf and dumb.
Never mind about that now. If you want to save her, you've got to hurry.
Gilbert unwinds the bandage from the patient's head, and Miss Troy smiles up at him groggily. As he continues unwrapping her, Madame Coomer comes down the corridor toward the compartment.
Parson will be back in a minute. What's going to happen then?
We can hold them off till we get past Morsk. The frontier's a few miles beyond the station.
Madame Coomer steps in. Before she can cry out, Gilbert claps a hand over her mouth and wrestles her down on the stretcher.
Look, come on, there's still time.
Dr. Hartz pays off the man in the beret.
Cosa che avessi clinic?
500 solamente? Dopo tutto quello che ho fatto, cosa poi? Di questo orecchio morsicato da quella ragazza.
At a glance from the Baroness, Hartz takes out more money. Meanwhile,
at Morskin. You finished?
When the nun nods, Gilbert opens the door to the next compartment, where Iris is exercising. He smacks Iris on the bottom.
Hold it out, kid. You're not drugged. I'll explain it. Abracadabra.
Miss Boy!
They embrace.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you very much.
Careful.
Dr. Hartz comes along the corridor. He checks their door, then enters his own compartment, where he finds the nun standing beside a bandaged patient.
Ready?
Yes.
He steps through the connecting door to the next compartment and finds Gilbert and Iris slumped over, just as he left them. He leans Iris back against Gilbert's shoulder. Then he steps out the door to the corridor. He summons a porter and points toward the door of his own compartment. Gilbert opens their built-in washroom.
All right, Miss Roy?
Yes, thank you. It's rather like the rush hour on the underground.
The train is approaching a station.
Showing up.
He opens the door enough to peer out. They come to a stop near a waiting ambulance. As Dr. Hartz approaches the attendants, Gilbert leans back with Iris. The stretcher with its bandaged patient is loaded into the ambulance.
Tavera. Tavera.
Hartz climbs into the ambulance and sits beside the stretcher.
I'm sorry you've had such an uncomfortable journey, Miss Troy.
He notices the hastily wrapped bandage and undoes it, discovering Madame Coomer. He silences her and looks back at the train with a deepening frown. Then he climbs out. Composing himself, He steps back to the train in time to intercept the nun.
Get back on the train.
Arts looks around the platform until he spots a couple of uniformed policemen. He strides over to them. The policemen listen to him and then salute.
I hope nothing goes wrong. Aren't we stopping rather a long time?
The ambulance is going. We'll be off in a jiffy.
Hartz and a policeman watch a yard man unhitch the coupling between the two carriages. As the policeman waves to the engineer, the doctor climbs aboard.
Another couple of minutes, we'll be over the border.
Next door, the Baroness addresses the nun.
No, I've been well paid. I've done plenty of dirty work for it, but this was murder, and she was an Englishwoman.
You are Van der Riek?
My husband was, but I'm English. And you were going to butcher her in cold blood.
Your little diversion made it necessary not only to remove the lady in question, but two others as well.
You can't do that.
Also, it would be unwise of us to permit the existence of anyone who cannot be trusted.
You wouldn't dare. I know too much.
The nun's eyes widen as the Baroness reaches into her handbag.
I think we're over the border now. Come out, Miss Boyd.
He helps her out of her hiding place.
What an unpleasant journey.
Never mind. You shall have a corner seat for the rest of the way. There you are. Okay, now that it's over, I think you ought to tell us what it's all about. What was that scream?
Surely it was only the train whistle.
It wasn't. It was a woman.
Be careful.
Gilbert slips out into the corridor and discovers they've been separated from the rest of the train.
They've rumbled. We're on a branch line and they've slipped the rear part of the train.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Here, who are you? And why are these people going to these lengths to get home?
I haven't the faintest idea. I'm a children's governess, you know. I can only think they made some terrible mistake.
Why are you holding out on us? Tell us the truth. You've got us involved in this fantastic plot. You might at least trust us.
I really don't know.
I wonder if there's anybody else left on the train.
Well, there's only the dining car in front, but there won't be anybody there now.
What'd you make it? Tea time. And all the English will be there. I'm going to take a look. Come on, we better stick together.
In the dining car, Charters glances up as the trio enters.
There's the old girl turned up.
Told you a lot of fuss about nothing. Bolt must have jammed.
I've got something to say. Will you all please listen? An attempt has been made to abduct this lady by force. Reason to believe that the people who did it are going to try again.
The devil's a fellow driveling about.
Well, if you don't believe me, you can look out of the window. This train's been diverted onto a branch line.
What are you talking about? Well, abductions, diverted.
We're telling you the truth.
Well, I'm not in the least interested. And you've annoyed us enough with your ridiculous story.
My dear chap, you must have got hold of the wrong end of the stick somewhere.
Yes, things like that just don't happen.
We are not in England now.
I don't see what difference that makes.
We're stopping.
They halt near two cars on a side road.
Do you see those cars? They're here to take Miss Froy away.
Nonsense. Look, there go a couple of people.
Hartz and the Baroness head for the cars.
Cars have obviously come to pick them up.
Well, in that case, why go to the trouble of uncoupling the train and diverting it?
Uncoupling?
There's nothing left of the train beyond the sleeping car.
There must be. Our bags are in the first class carriage.
No, not any longer. Shall I come and look?
This is a practical joke. I warn you, I shan't think it very funny.
As Gilbert opens the door, the nun, bound and gagged, stumbles into his arms. They help her to a table.
What's this on that brand?
You don't suppose there's something in this fellow's story, Colicott, do you?
Seems a bit queer.
Well, I mean, after all, people don't go about tying up nuns.
The nun sips some brandy and smiles a thanks.
Someone's coming.
A uniformed officer approaches the train.
They can't possibly do anything to us. We are British subjects.
The tall officer makes his way into the dining car. He surveys the group, then salutes.
I have come to offer the most sincere apologies. An extremely serious incident has occurred. An attempt has been made to interfere with passengers on this train.
The nun whispers to Gilbert.
It was brought to the notice of the authorities. And so if you will be good enough to accompany me to Moskin, I will inform the British Embassy at once. Ladies and gentlemen, the cars are at your disposal.
Well, we're very grateful. Lucky some of you fellows understand English.
Well, I was at Oxford.
Oh, really? So was I. What year?
Hold on. This woman seems to be trying to say something. I don't understand the language, and it may be important. Would you...
As the officer bends to the nun, Gilbert clobbers him with a chair.
That's fixed him.
Behind them, the steward hurries out.
What blazes did you do that for?
Well, I was at Cambridge.
What's that got to do with it? You heard what he said, didn't you?
I heard what she said. That was a trick to get us off the train.
I don't believe it. The man's explanation was quite satisfactory.
Things like this might cause a war.
Nada.
Outside, the steward informs Hartz.
Ufficiale di teta.
I'm going outside. Tell him what's occurred. It's up to us to apologize and put the matter right.
Franca.
At a word from the Baroness, a soldier draws his pistol and fires at Charters. The Englishman looks down in surprise and then withdraws into the dining car. His hand is bleeding.
You were right. Do you mind a minute?
Certainly.
From the cars, Hartz waves at the chief steward to get out.
Look as if they mean business.
I'm afraid so. Well,
they can't do anything. It would mean an international situation.
It's happened before.
Hartz approaches with several soldiers.
They're coming. Don't let them in. They'll murder us. They daren't let us go now.
As the nun sinks back in her chair, Gilbert finds the unconscious officer's gun. Then he lowers a window.
I order you to surrender at once.
Nothing doing. They're coming in here now. I'll fire.
I warned you.
When they advance, Gilbert shoots one of the soldiers.
Better take cover. They'll start in a minute now.
Nasty jam, this. Don't like the look of it.
Got plenty of ammunition.
Hold pouch.
Good.
Duck down, you.
I'm not going to fight. It's madness.
It'll be safer to protest down here.
Eric ignores her. The soldiers maneuver behind the cars.
Hello, they're trying to work around to the other side.
You're behaving like a pack of fools. What chance have we got against a lot of armed men?
You heard what the Mother Superior said. If we surrender now, we're in for it.
Two soldiers creep toward the train. Gilbert shoots one of them. The second ducks down as the other soldiers open fire from behind the cars. Gilbert fires back.
Never get to the match now.
Give it to me.
Give it to me.
Hargett struggles with Eric.
What's going on here?
He's got a gun and he won't use it.
What's the idea?
Well, I've told you. I won't be a party to this sort of thing. I don't believe in fighting.
A little pacifist, eh? Won't work, old boy. Early Christians tried it and got thrown to the lions. Come on, hang on.
Another window is shot out. Margaret wrests the gun from Eric.
I'm not afraid to use it.
Caldecott takes it.
Probably no use to it.
He aims out the window.
Once one about his cigars.
Talking rot. He's a damn good shot.
The old hand hasn't lost his cunning. You know, I'm half inclined to believe that there's some rational explanation to all this. Rotten. Only knock his hat.
Would you mind if I talk to you for a minute?
What now?
Please forgive me, but it's very important.
Gilbert hands his gun to Charters.
I'll hold the fort.
I think you're safer along here. You come to
me. Keep your head low.
Iris and Gilbert follow Miss Floyd to the far side of the dining car.
I just wanted to tell you that I must be getting along now.
But you can't. You'll never get away. You'll be shot down.
I must take that risk. Listen carefully. In case I'm unlucky and you get through, I want you to take back a message to a Mr. Callender, the Foreign Office in Whitehall.
Then you are a spy.
I always think that's such a grim word.
Oh, what is the message?
It's a tune.
Tune?
It contains, in code, of course, the vital clause of a secret pact between two European countries. I want you to memorize it.
Oh, go ahead.
The first part of it goes like this. Oh, perhaps I'd better write it down. Have you got a piece of paper?
No, don't bother. I was brought up on music. I can memorize anything.
Very well.
Hello, the old girl's gone off a rocker.
I don't wonder.
You see?
Why don't you fish? Those swine out there will go on fire until they kill the
lovers. For goodness sake, shut up, Eric. That's right. Now we've got two chances instead of one.
You bet.
I'm sure you'll remember it.
Oh, don't worry, I won't stop whistling.
Well, this is my best way out.
Yes, just about.
Gilbert lowers a window.
But you may be hit, and even if you do get away, they'll stop you at the frontier. We can't let her go like this.
No, this is a hell of a risk you're taking.
Off a job, one must take risks. I'm very grateful to you both for all you've done. I do hope and pray no harm will come to you, and that we shall all meet again one day.
I hope so, too. Good luck.
Good luck.
Will you help me?
That's all right.
Now, you take, wait on top.
Gilbert lifts Miss Froy out through the window. And lowers her to the ground.
Goodbye.
Iris hands down her purse. Crouching, Miss Froy heads away from the train. Soldiers see her legs under it. She hurries toward a rise.
Andrega!
Arms fly out as she disappears.
Was she hit?
I'm not sure.
Aldecott wings another soldier. He fires his last round.
Well, that's the end of my 12. There's not much left here, either.
Listen, we've only got one chance now. Gotta get this train going. Drive it back to the main line and then try and cross the frontier.
So there's a bit of a tall order, isn't it? Those driver fellows are not likely to do as you tell them, you know.
Gilbert takes the empty gun.
You're bluffing with this. Who's coming with me?
Well, you can count on me.
Me too.
Oh, we can't all go. You stay here and carry on. And if we have any luck, we'll stop the train when we reach the points, and you jump out and switch them over.
Okay. You idiots. You're just inviting death.
Iris blows Gilbert a kiss before he leaves with Calder.
Just because I've the sense to try and avoid being murdered, I'm accused of being a pacifist. All right. I'd rather be called a rat than die like one. Think for a moment, will you? If we give ourselves up, they daren't murder us in cold blood. They're bound to give us a trial.
Stop gibbering, Eric. Nobody's listening to you.
Very well. You go your way. I'll go mine.
Hey, where are you off to?
I know what I'm about. I'm doing the only sensible thing.
Oh, let the fellow go if he wants to.
As Eric appears in the doorway, he's shot. He falls to the ground. Weakly, he waves his white handkerchief. Then, he expires. Charters, Iris, and Margaret look down at him in horror. Then Charters fires at the soldiers. Gilbert and Caldecott climb up onto the coal tender and head for the engine, back in the dining car.
Oh, please. Why aren't we going? Why aren't we going? They said we were going, why aren't we? If only he can get us away now, he must.
The only one left. I'll keep that for a sitting.
They're moving away from the cars. They're coming towards us.
Pity we haven't a few more rounds.
It's funny. I told my husband when I left him that I wouldn't see him again.
Gilbert! Gilbert!
As Hartz and the soldiers advance, the train jerks.
Get, we're off!
Hartz and the soldiers hurry back to the cars. In the engine...
Go on, keep going.
Gilbert holds a gun on the two engineers. Firing shot, it's one of them. Another shot hits the second engineer.
I say, you know how to control this thing?
Now, watch your fellow start it. Anyway, I'll know something about it. Once over miniature engine on the dim searchlight.
Well, good. I look out for the fight.
On a parallel road, the cars pursue them.
The lights are chasing us. Look.
The cars are gaining on them.
We can't have far to go.
The officer Gilbert knocked out comes to and sits up. He spots his pistol and picks it up.
It's time for my job changing the points. Thank heavens we should be in neutral territory.
That will not be necessary.
The officer gets to his feet with the pistol.
I'm sorry, but the points, as you call them, will not be changed over. Will you please be seated?
Charters and the two women sit down. In the engine.
Well, they are just ahead of us. Think you can stop it?
Hope so. Keep quite still until my friends arrive.
The nun, unnoticed by the officer, signals to Iris.
Just one thing you don't know, Captain. There's only one bullet left in that gun, and if you shoot me, you'll give the others a chance. You're in rather a difficult position, aren't you?
Sit down, please.
The nun slips out.
All right.
As the train chugs to a stop...
Where the devil's trotting?
The nun climbs down. From the road, the soldiers fire at her as she pushes the lever to switch the track. She runs back toward the engine.
Go ahead!
Gilbert starts the train moving. As they pass the nun, Caldecott grabs her hand and they haul her aboard. She grimaces.
Don't let it just bend there.
Thank you. train chugs off. The Baroness and Hartz watch it go.
Baroness Gerard.
Caron Mandaroon. Or as they say in English, jolly good luck to them.
My word, I'm glad I was over on you. Heaven knows what the government will say about all this.
Nothing at all. They'll hush it up.
What?
Caldecott pulls on a chain.
Hey, take a hand off that thing. I've got to remember a tune.
Remember?
A ship steams across the English Channel. Later, a train pulls into Victoria Station. In a compartment, Gilbert hums to himself as Iris touches up her makeup.
Water, sir?
Nothing.
Well, we're home, Gilbert. Can't you stop humming that awful tune? You must know it backwards.
Well, I'm not taking any risks. Charles, be here to meet you.
I expect so.
You'll be pretty busy between now and Thursday.
Well, I could meet you for lunch or dinner, if you'd like it.
Sorry, I didn't mean that. Matter of fact, I've got to deliver this theme song to Miss Froy. When I've done that, I'm going to dash off to Yorkshire and finish my book.
Please.
Ready?
Yes.
He follows her out to the platform. Charters and Caldecott are heading for the gate.
Ample time to catch the 6:50 to Manchester after all.
The two Englishmen are suddenly arrested by a newspaper billboard. Test match abandoned. Floods. They stare in disbelief. By the cab stand, Gilbert waits with Iris.
Any sign of Charles yet?
No, I can't see him.
Well, this is where we say goodbye.
He holds out his hand. Iris glances away. Then abruptly jumps into a cab.
Oh, what matter?
He follows her gaze and spots a fellow in a derby hat. Smiling, he climbs in beside her.
Charles?
Yes, you heartless, callous, selfish, swollen-headed beast.
Gilbert takes her in his arms and kisses her. The cabbie glances back.
Are you going anywhere?
Foreign office.
Gilbert and Iris wait in an anteroom at the Foreign Office.
Where are we going for our honeymoon?
I don't know. Somewhere quiet. Somewhere where there are no trains.
The Campbell will see you now.
As they start toward the office, Gilbert suddenly stops.
Wait a minute. It's gone.
What's gone?
Oh, the tune. I forgot it.
No, no.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me concentrate. Dun, 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 dun.
No. That's the wedding march.
This is awful. I've done nothing else but sing it since the day before yesterday, and now I've forgotten it completely.
They frown, listening to the music coming from the office. Then Gilbert snaps his fingers. They make their way inside, where they find several people from the Foreign Office listening to the tune Miss Froy is playing.
Miss Froy!
Well, I'll be...
With a delighted smile, she takes their hands. The end. The characters in The Lady Vanishes were played by Margaret Lockwood as Iris Henderson, Michael Redgrave as Gilbert, Paul Lucas as Dr. Hartz, Dame May Whitty as Miss Froy, Cecil Parker, Eric Todhunter, Lyndon Travers, Margaret, Naughton Wayne, Caldecott, Basil Radford as Charters, Mary Clare as the Baroness, Emil Borio as the Hotel Manager, Googie Withers as Blanche, Sally Stewart, Julie, Philip Lever, Senor Dopo, Zelma Vasdias as Signora Dopo, Catherine Lacey as the Nun, Josephine Wilson, Madame Coomer, Charles Oliver as the Officer, Kathleen Tremaine, Anna.
This described version of The Lady Vanishes was created by Audiovision Canada. For other described movies and audio cinema titles available from Audiovision Canada, call toll-free 1-800-567-6755.